call the answer line, where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Media Network, Radio Netherlands Weekly Communications Review with Jonathan Marks.
Greetings. Let's start with some very good news for our listeners in Asia. You may know we've been looking at ways to improve our shortwave coverage of Asia for quite some time. After extensive research, Radio Netherlands presented a plan to the Dutch government back in early 1991, which proposed the building of a relay station in Thailand as the joint project with the BBC. But whilst the British government said yes, the Dutch government decided not to support the project, leaving Radio Netherlands with a growing reception problem in an important target area. At the end of last month, the Radio Netherlands Board of Governors met to consider the options. And last Friday, the results of that meeting were announced. Radio Netherlands is planning to hire airtime on transmitters in Russia. Meneer Dijkstra, chairman of the Board of Management at Radio Netherlands, explained to me what's been decided so far.
Well, Jonathan, the Radio Netherlands Board of Governors has given the management the full authority to go negotiate a contract with the Russian authorities for the hire of transmitting facilities. And we have already done some background research. A delegation from Radio Netherlands has been to Moscow to get an overview of what facilities would be available to us. Those discussions were positive, and the experience gained was important in deciding to start negotiations for a contract. We know there is a growing interest in our transmissions from listeners in Asia. But with the solar cycle now declining rapidly, we need to find transmission facilities that are closer to our listeners in South and Southeast Asia. It is clear that our signal level from Flevo and Madagascar is not sufficient to remain competitive. We think that being able to hire transmission time from the Russian authorities will be an important step in improving our coverage of the Asian continent.
And of course, we'll keep you posted as soon as we're able to announce the extra frequencies. Well, tuning the old radio dial last Saturday morning, I bumped into programming that sounded as though it was straight out of the 40s. But there was a reason.
You're tuned to London and the programmes of the BBC World Service. We'd like to apologise for the interruption to our scheduled programmes. This was caused by a fire alarm at Bush House. But everyone's quite safe, and for the moment we've transferred our operations to Broadcasting House. Our next scheduled programme is As I Recall, which can be heard at 7:30 Greenwich Mean Time. In the meantime, here's some more music.
It seems building work in the newsroom spontaneously ignited, but the real hot news from Bush House came yesterday when Managing Director John Tusa announced that the BBC is to hire airtime on Russian transmitters. Two senders in the Russian Far East are being hired to improve reception of BBC's Mandarin language programmes, beamed to mainland China. Those broadcasts, currently transmitted via facilities in Hong Kong and Singapore, are subject to intense jamming by the Chinese authorities. Under the same deal, the BBC will get airtime on a transmitter in Tashkent to beam programmes into the Indian subcontinent. Deutsche Welle, the German external service, has been using former jamming transmitters in Russia for programmes beamed to Asia for quite a while now. So I asked Peter Zenger of their RF department whether they were working out.
Oh yeah, we are using about 20 hours a day via Russian transmitters, and we like to call them the former jamming transmitters. And we are very happy with the outcome because they're closer to the target areas. And there are only some problems with the modulation feed, because it is such a complicated modulation network they are operating that sometimes we have a bit of problems, but not really.
The changes in Eastern Europe have meant that some Western broadcasters have had to adjust the focus of their activities, and that includes the broadcasters in Cologne.
We have another project which is at the moment going on in Portugal at our station in Sines, where we are not increasing the amount of transmitters, but we are installing two rotatable antennas, because Portugal was in the 70s built for Europe, and since the political scenery changed quite tremendously, we can use Portugal as well for other areas like West Africa or Africa in general, and for the Americas. So we install two new rotatable antennas, curtain antennas, which will be ready also by the end of this year.
There's only one network, Media Network with Jonathan Marks.
Ringing around the receiver manufacturers this week, it looks like several interesting radios are in the pipeline. Many projects are still confidential, but it's encouraging to see that developments are still progressing, mostly in the shortwave portable field. Sony in Germany have already announced that in November the ICF SW33 will be available. More details on that next week. You may remember that during our reportage from the Friedrichshafen Fair in southern Germany, I mentioned that Sony was launching a new portable onto the European market. Well, it's now arrived. It's a budget analog portable called the ICF SW15, and we purchased one for just under $100. Nick Meanwell joins me now to review it.
There's a remarkable similarity in looks to the Sony ICF SW20. Although both sets are available at the moment, it looks like the ICF SW15 is going to replace the older ICF SW20 in the long term. The receiver measures 16 by 9 by 3 centimetres, which fits in the palm of your hand. Despite the small size, the radio produces quite good audio, especially when the two-position tone control is set in the music position. There's no long wave on this set, so if you rely on that band for listening to stations in Ireland, Britain, France or Germany, for instance, then you do need to make another choice. It offers FM coverage, medium wave, 531 to 1602 kHz, and 7 shortwave bands. The medium wave performance is excellent, and unlike many synthesized receivers for $100, this radio didn't overload when we operated the radio within 15 kilometres of a 400 kilowatt medium wave station.
The set has a dual conversion design on shortwave. The single bandwidth filter is sharp, so separating stations 5 kHz apart is quite easy. Although since this is a point-and-dial analog set, you don't have the advantage of a digital frequency readout. The set has a lock switch to prevent the radio switching itself on when packed in a suitcase. The ICF SW15 works off 3 penlight cells. On our sample, we were able to tune in the following shortwave ranges: from 5775 to 6430 kHz, 6880 to 7525, 9380 to 10030, 11615 to 12265, 15000 to 15650, and 17500 to 18150 kHz, plus 21325 to 21980 kHz. On the face of it, then, the coverage is better than the older ICF SW20. There's far more out-of-band coverage, such as more frequencies just outside the 19-metre band. However, Sony hasn't done anything about the new 22-metre band, in other words, 13 megahertz. So for holidaymakers in Europe who want to listen to some of the clearest and sometimes the only audible frequencies from Austria, the USA, Canada, Holland, Russia and Australia, it's simply bad luck. Whilst the band spread on the radio is clearly better than on sets like the discontinued Sony WA-5000, the exclusion of the 22-metre band is going to severely limit the success of this radio, at least in Europe.
The radio is clearly a direct competitor to the Grundig Yachtboy 206, introduced at the end of last year. Side by side, the Sony has the edge on the Grundig in terms of selectivity. But the Grundig sounds better, and it has a much wider coverage of the shortwave bands, including 22 metres. So Sony have come close to making an excellent portable. but the ICF SW15 has to get a low rating because of its restricted coverage.
Thanks for that, Nick. Now, I can surprise you here, a little bit of history. A letter from James Robertson arrives from Birkenhead in England. He says, and I quote, "Is Nick meanwhile the same person who used to present a late-night phone-in show on BRMB Radio during 1985-86? Is that you?
85-86, the very same, James. Thank you for that letter. That's nice. It's come as a, it's a slight shock. Yeah, absolutely true. I used to do the late show there, the morning show before that, then the late show, and then I was programme manager there. Is that progress or not, I ask myself.
Well, Nick moved from that commercial radio station in Birmingham in Britain to manage our presentation here at Radio Netherlands English Service. He's pictured in the new issue of our free newsletter called On Target, which I'm told is on its way to some 35,000 people around the globe from the printing press in Costa Rica. And on the inside, you can see a picture of Nick in action driving our Pacific service.
Certainly can, but it's not just as simple as that. There's a competition here, isn't there?
Yes, but Robert Chessel will be announcing the On Target Mystery Competition on Saturday, September the 19th, in his Sounds Interesting programme. So if you want the competition question, put that date into your diary. The lines come up to Homestead, Southern Florida now, where Jeff White is standing by with a review of another radio.
Jonathan, I'm looking at a very basic General Electric brand AM/FM portable radio. It's not exactly a DX machine, but it is being given away free here in Homestead, and it's good enough to pull in a 400-watt signal on 1610 kilohertz AM called Radio Recovery.
Good morning. This is Radio Recovery, the voice of Joint Task Force Andrew. The Federal Emergency Management Agency and the state of Florida has established 13 satellite disaster application centers to help residents who were hard hit by Hurricane Andrew.
Radio Recovery is a station aimed specifically at the residents of the areas of South Florida that were hardest hit by Hurricane Andrew. It's located in a small Army tent here in Homestead. In fact, it's operated by the U.S. Army. Lieutenant Darius White is the officer in charge.
This is a 400-watt mini-AM system. It has basically four modules, one module being outside being the antenna tuning unit that tunes the antenna to a given frequency. And we have various other equipment, audio mixers, dual cassette decks, reel-to-reel, and a card machine.
We're sort of in the middle of a tent here, basically a kind of an open tent, and highways around and generators going and animals around. I mean, it's not exactly the the best circumstances for live broadcasting.
No, it's not the best circumstances for anything, tell you the truth, for field hygiene or anything in particular, but we have to make do with what we have.
In addition to Lieutenant White, Radio Recovery's staff consists of three Army broadcast journalists and four technicians with the Army's Psychological Operations Group. It went on the air September 1st and is presently broadcasting in four languages: English, Spanish, Haitian Creole, and a little-known Guatemalan Mayan Indian language called Kanhabol. The Spanish, Creole, and Kanhabol language announcers are volunteers from the local population. The English language announcers are Army personnel. Sergeant First Class Steve Malnar, who's in charge of Radio Recovery's broadcast journalists, jokes that this is the only 400-watt quadrilingual radio station in the United States.
I personally have never been a part of anything like this before, and as far as elements from the PSYOPS community, the Fourth Psychological Operations Group, and then individuals from the public affairs field working together, this is very unique. That's really never been done before.
But Jeff, I've driven through that area of Florida in the past. I recall that the dial was full of radio stations on both AM and FM. What can Radio Recovery do that isn't already being done by local commercial radio stations?
Well, in Homestead, there's only one radio station, and it broadcasts only in Spanish. And in nearby cities, there are no radio stations. Of course, people can hear the Miami radio stations, and that's what they normally listen to. But in this case, they need some very, very local information, as Sergeant Melnar explains.
Radio Recovery, the hours that we are on, does nothing but broadcast emergency disaster relief information to the individuals in the affected community in the four languages of English, Carajabal, Spanish, and Creole. And we are constantly broadcasting that. We don't do any entertainment programming, anything of that nature at all. We are just a pipeline, a conduit of information straight into there about where they can get food, where they can seek shelter, where they can get medical care. Those things that you just kind of take for granted, and then once they're gone, and, you know, knowing where to find them is gone, somebody needs to fill that void and get the information back out, and that is what we're doing.
The news about this station has certainly got out to people in other parts of the United States, and that's led to some phone calls to our answer line, Hilversum 724-222. Here's a typical call.
This is Norman Hill in Washington, D.C., United States of America. The American Forces Radio and TV Service has set up radio recovery in the hurricane-stricken area of South Florida on 1610 kilohertz. Does the Army know that Caribbean Beacon operates a 50,000-watt radio station out of Anguilla on 1610?
So I guess, Jeff, there must be some interference problems at night.
Well, station officials explained to me, Jonathan, that the Federal Communications Commission has certain frequencies, including 1610 kilohertz, set aside for emergency operations like this. So it wasn't a matter of the Army choosing a frequency. The FCC assigned it to them. But I'll agree, they could have chosen a better frequency. In Homestead itself, there's no problem picking up radio recovery at night. But listen to what it sounds like just 10 miles north of Homestead at 8:30 p.m. local time.
Sounds like the Caribbean Beacon is overriding radio recovery completely there.
Exactly, but again, as I mentioned, it's not a problem in the immediate Homestead area. And the Army also tells us that within the next few days, they're going to replace the 400-watt transmitter with a 1,000-watt unit. So that should give them an even wider coverage area. They're saying maybe up to about 80 kilometers.
Jeff, not far away from you is the satellite ground station in Homestead, which is an important link for Radio Netherlands Pan-AMSAT distribution to South America and the Caribbean. I also note that U.S. President George Bush is asking Congress for $7.6 billion to pay the cleanup costs after Andrew. I guess places like Homestead are still without electricity.
Yes, and not only that, many people also lost all of their possessions, including radios, as a result of the hurricane. So I asked Sergeant Maldar how they're sure the local population can hear radio recovery.
Well, what we did, what the Army did, I should say, they handed out at the food distribution points, which are set up, they handed out transistor radios. Now, we had about 12,000 of these that were either donated by the Army and Air Force Exchange Service, or they were radios that were left over after the conflict in the Persian Gulf, radios that were to be used by the soldiers. So we put these out in the community, along with 8 batteries apiece, so we could guarantee some longevity there of reception. We're just hearing a lot from people in the local community, some of the smaller areas right around us, that they consider us to be a very valuable resource.
And just how long will radio recovery remain on the air? No one in the Army will speculate, but Lieutenant Darius White replies like this.
When everybody knows everything they need to know, then we can pack up and go home, or until the recovery is so fully complete that we have skyscrapers on the inside of us.
Well, it may be quite some time before that happens, but in the meantime, Sergeant Steve Malnar says Radio Recovery staff will continue to operate one of the more unusual broadcasting stations in the history of the United States.
City of Homestead building inspectors are inspecting damaged homes and buildings. So far, inspections show 75 to 80% of the buildings are structurally unsafe and uninhabitable. Also, the City of Homestead will not provide electrical power.
Jeff White reporting there.
Media Network, minutes ahead when seconds count.
Now we're off to visit Andy Sennett, who's busy preparing the 1993 edition of the World Radio TV Handbook at the editorial offices in Amsterdam. Sandy, what have you got for us?
Well, a few weeks ago, Jonathan, you spoke to Jan Willem Drexhager of Radio Netherlands Frequency Office about the recent frequency coordination meeting held in Evesham in England. The results of that meeting have now been released, and I've been looking at some of the changes that have been made to the schedules that were originally proposed.
Any surprises?
Yes, Bulgaria has agreed to move from several well-established frequencies and go out of band in order to eliminate interference to other stations. Between 19 and 22 hours UTC, Radio Sofia has agreed to use 6210 kHz, 6210, instead of 6160 kHz. The transmitter is a powerful one, 250 kilowatts, so this move should help to improve reception of Radio Austria International on 6155 kilohertz during the evening hours here in Europe.
Have they made any other changes, though?
Well, Radio Sofia's 100 kilowatt transmitter that was planned to operate on 6135 kilohertz between 1330 and 22 hours UTC will now use 6220 kilohertz instead, and between 1530 and 2230, another 100 kilowatt transmitter, which would have used 7170 kilohertz, will instead be operating on 6230 kilohertz, and these two changes are to avoid interference with transmitters in Russia.
So, if I've got that down correctly, that means between 19 and 22 hours UTC, Radio Sofia is going to be on 6210, 6220 and 6230 kilohertz all at the same time.
Well, that's what they said they'll do, but of course we can't be 100% sure until the winter season commences on the 27th of September.
Now, this past Sunday, a number of international broadcasters already made some frequency changes. Any news about that?
Yes, although these days many stations, including Radio Netherlands, have only two broadcasting seasons a year, some still make changes on the first Sundays of March, May, September and November. Russia and the other former USSR republics do both, so in effect they have six changes a year.
Which must, of course, be very difficult to keep track of.
Exactly, and Tom Sundstrom in New Jersey, who maintains a database of English language schedules, tells me that since Sunday, many frequencies used by CIS stations have suddenly disappeared. At 22 hours UTC, Tom hears Radio Moscow World Service on only 11750, 11675 and 9855 kHz. At 23 hours UTC, the only frequency Tom's hearing for Radio Vilnius is 9530 kHz. And at midnight UTC, Radio Kiev announces eight frequencies being to North America, and Tom hears only two of those, plus another two which aren't announced. Those actually heard are 6080, 7250, 9685 and 12060 kHz.
And those four frequencies are at midnight UTC, so altogether it's a jungle out there.
Yes, certainly is. But to be fair, I think some of the confusion may be the result of changes agreed at the frequency coordination meeting we mentioned earlier. But with more and more organisations hiring airtime on transmitters in the CIS, engineering schedules alone won't be much use. It's what they're modulated with that really matters.
Input on our output to Radio Netherlands answer line. Call 31 for Holland, 35 for Hilversum, then 724-222.
So if you notice any new frequencies that aren't being announced, then you know the number to call, the Radio Netherlands 24-hour answer line, Hilversum 724-222. Now, what's next?
Well, Eichard Kadeen of Radio Netherlands passed along some schedules to me this week, and the new one from Radio RSA includes a frequency in the 75-metre band for the first time, namely 3995 kHz, 3995, between 03 and 05 hours UTC. That's to provide regional coverage to southern Africa. So the complete English schedule of Radio RSA is now as follows. At 02 to 04 hours on 9730 kHz, at 03 to 05 on 3995, at 04 to 07 on 15220 kHz, at 10 to midday UTC on 11900 kHz, and 16 to 18 hours UTC on 9565 and 11885 kHz. And all those broadcasts are, of course, beamed only to Africa.
Right, all since Radio RSA dropped several services that it had to overseas target areas. A frequency change, finally, from the Pacific.
Yes, in the latest issue of the Italian publication Playdex, there's a report from Paul Ormandy in New Zealand, who says that Radio Kiribati is now using a new shortwave frequency, 17440 kHz, 17440, instead of 14917 kHz, which they'd been using for some time.
Well, thanks for that information, Andy. Arthur Cushion in New Zealand phoned the station, Radio Kiribati, to find out more about what was going on. It seems the transmitting antenna has been changed.
The 14917 frequency had a rhombic, and Telecom have taken that down, and they're on 17440 using a log periodic. Now, the schedule is the same according to the chief technician, but I note they don't open now till 0600, with the BBC News, 0609 Local News, 0615 Music, 0630 a program of Pacific Island News. They plan to extend the transmissions, but the problem is that the transmitter is used for commercial traffic, and until they can get a longer time on the frequency, they're restricted to the present hours. So our best reception here at the moment is 06 to 0830 UTC on 17440 kilohertz. The power is now rated as 500 watts.
And it seems reception of Radio Kiribati, at least in New Zealand, is variable. Sometimes it's strong, sometimes it ain't there at all. Many people take a radio on their holidays to stay in touch with home. Marcel Roberts is an active shortwave listener who lives in Arnhem, right in the east of Holland. He takes his radio with him to do some serious band scanning on his travels. He's just back from a trip to Asia, during which he found himself having to stop over at a hotel in Amman Airport in Jordan. So he had a tune around and came across the former Dutch fishing vessel, which peace activist A.B. Nathan turned into a floating radio station, the Voice of Peace, broadcasting from somewhere in the Mediterranean. The shortwave transmitter of the Voice of Peace is off the air, but the station is still active elsewhere on the dial, 100 megahertz to be exact.
To my surprise, I was able to listen to the Voice of Peace on FM. First I thought I was listening to an Israeli radio station, but then suddenly an identification in English came and more programming in English language followed.
Because they do relay Kol Israel, don't they?
Yeah, they have the news from Kol Israel.
Sof ha-chadashot mikol Israel.
No more war, no more bloodshed.
You're listening to the Voice of Peace, broadcasting from somewhere in the Mediterranean. You've heard them time after time after time. The same old overplayed country classics. We've got some of the hottest new releases and the best of the classics. Sunday at 9, the Voice of Peace goes country.
But there's another ship out there too that we don't hear much about.
No, it's called Arut Sharif, and it was also audible on FM in Amman.
Okay, let's have an extract of that.
Arut Sheva Meareach be'eser et Rav Uzi Kalchaim uve'achat esre et Orech Hadin Aharon Papo. Mishtam esre karagil Sheva be'Arut Sheva hayom im Chagai Segal.
There seems to be more fading on that signal.
Yeah, the distance is very large from Jordan to the Mediterranean. But when you listen at night, the signal is more clear. But I made my recordings at daylight already.
But this second ship doesn't broadcast in English?
No, it's in Hebrew. And the type of programming is completely different from the Voice of Peace. The Voice of Peace, they have a program more for younger listeners.
Voice of Peace owner A.B. Nathan was released from an Israeli prison earlier this year. He'd been detained because of having contact with the Palestine Liberation Organization. He's now active on other fronts.
I read in a newspaper in Jordan that A.B. Nathan plans to set up a refugee camp in Kenya, where he plans to give shelter to 40,000 Somali refugees. And he's now asking for donations to everybody, but especially, of course, the Israeli and American Jews.
Listening in to the local FM in Amman proved interesting too, especially the mix on the English service.
This is Radio Jordan broadcasting from Amman. Good morning. We are transmitting on the medium wave of 350.9 meters, 855 kilohertz, and on the VHF FM on 96.3 and 90 megahertz, and to the northern parts of the country on 90.9 megahertz.
Ladies and gentlemen, the show is about to begin.
Good morning to all those people out there. Good morning, people. Good morning, Amman. Good morning, dearest listeners, and welcome to the Sunday morning show.
Tell me what the trouble is. I'll try to listen good and give the best advice that I can.
Yeah,
you should know that Sunday morning is just a working day there. They have Sunday when we have Friday, but it's surprising when you wake up and you hear a kind of old-fashioned type of programming with rather modern records.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.